and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello there.
It is inclement weather out there.
Okay. See what you've done.
I'm going to try and start doing these for each one.
Yeah. I feel like you could have done something a little bit better.
I mean, I'm sure the listeners are loving it.
Yeah, Clementine. I don't know. Go on, carry on.
Clementine?
That's the thing, isn't it? Is it a fruit?
What?
Clementine's a fruit.
I know it is, mate. Yeah. Like, that's common knowledge.
Okay. So you could say, like, oh, I fancy a Clementine today.
Okay, well, I think inclement weather works better for the name of the goalkeeper coach that we're about to introduce.
Fine. We'll go with that then.
Not introducing Paul Clementine, are we? Okay, well, this week's guest is a man who is part of an ever-increasing trend in goalkeeper coaching. Not a player by trade, but a studier of the game and on a trajectory which has seen him go from Middlesbrough to Wolves and via Tunisia to Huddersfield Town, where he now resides as goalkeeper coach. Paul Clements, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Good morning, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Great to have you on the show. Now, I hope you don't mind me saying it, but I guess to a lot of goalkeeper fans, to a lot of football fans, you're perhaps not the most familiar name. Perhaps a lot of goalkeeper coaches aren't the most familiar names. And considering you weren't a player, we had Andrew Sparks on the podcast before, the current Southampton goalkeeper coach, and his story was arguably equally, I suppose you could say, as interesting as players who were goalkeepers and then became goalkeeper coaches because of the nature of getting into the job without having actually played the game. Yours is quite similar.
Yeah, I definitely haven't managed Swansea. I've got an S on the end of my name. I haven't had the footballing career behind me that some coaches have had, but I don't think that's necessarily hindered me in any way. And 35 years old, I've got 15 full-time seasons behind me as a goalkeeping coach, so I suppose like a young goalkeeper that goes out on loan when they're younger and makes mistakes and learns their trade. I've done the same just through the coaching pathway instead of on the field, although the field would have been my first choice for sure.
Do you know, yeah, I want to go into depth on this because obviously knowing you personally in the way that I do, and fun enough, we spoke about this recently, and that there are goalkeeper coaches where it's now turned into much bigger than just turning up, serving balls at goalkeepers and then going to play golf in the afternoon. It is now a case of working internally, working with the lads you've got according to their needs, but then also looking outside and understanding what's going on elsewhere, and potentially at times there might be recruitment where, of course, you're going to have much more knowledge than maybe the manager or the head of recruitment. So it's turned into a much bigger thing. So for a lot of the goalkeeper coaches listening to this, this will no doubt, as we move on throughout this, be quite an inspiring podcast because you have done it a slightly different way. So what was your route? You say 15 years now and being the age you are. What was your route into the game?
I'd done schoolboys here at Leeds and gone up to Scotland with Stirling Albion and obviously realised that I wasn't going to make it. Went over to America for a little bit to play and ended up coming back with not really any sort of plan, because as most young players do now, they just dedicate their life to trying to make the grade, and I didn't. And I started just basically coaching local kids where I live now, Ingleby Barwick, sort of helped set up the club here, Tibbs, and got offered some part-time hours at Middlesbrough on the back of that, really, and started doing sort of the goalkeepers, because that's naturally what you sort of know. And then I was pestering Stephen Pearce to go up to Middlesbrough and watch the academy sessions constantly, and to be fair, he invited me up, threw me in at the deep end, went, right, crack on. I thought I was going to watch, said a few things about one of the players there, and he was like, yeah, that's my son, Brad, and I thought, no, I shouldn't have said that. But he said, no, you're right, and you're more than welcome to come and do a couple of hours, and that turned into a full-time position. So, yeah, I got a lot to thank Stephen Pearce for initially, to be fair, and that was the entry level, if you like, all that time ago.
It's funny, isn't it? Like I said, we are continually getting goalkeepers now who haven't been a part of the game in the traditional sense. But Pat Mountain is another name. Yes, he played to a certain level, but never really had an extensive career in the pro game. You worked with him at Wolves.
Yeah, he was a big part of why I went to Wolves. In fact, he was the part why I went to Wolves. I'd done 7 years at Middlesbrough, you know, a lot of stuff in the community, which was really good for me, and obviously the academy as well. But it was when the Triple P kicked in and the full-time roles were coming up within the academy, which was great for goalkeeping coaching, to be recognised that that position was needed. So I had a few options, really, and Wolves was one of them. And Simon Smith, who's obviously the Newcastle goalkeeping coach now, he supported me a lot at Middlesbrough because he was working for the FA and it was within his region. And he talked me into going for it full time, really, because I always had that in the back of my mind that, yeah, but what if a goalkeeper turns around and says to me, well, you haven't played, what are you on about? When I was on one of the courses, I sort of got into the same conversation with Pat, and I just felt I wanted to learn, like I still do every day now. And to go from Middlesbrough to see it done a completely different way, to see a completely different style with Pat, and I've got a lot to thank Pat for, because Pat sort of integrated me into the first team there. I was constantly with him. I could bounce ideas off him. And I'd like to think that the goalkeeping coaches who work under me now get that same back, because unless you can tap into the knowledge of people who are doing it, then, you know, you haven't got any chance to learn. So, yeah, I still speak to Pat every week on the phone when he travels in the morning. We have a weekly conversation, and, you know, that friendship will continue for years to come, for sure.
Yeah, no, he's he's one we had on the podcast as well, of course, and he's doing fantastically well at Bristol City. Of course, Dan Bentley doing as well as he is this season. And on that note, because of course you must come across so many different goalkeeper coaches, there's lots of different goalkeeping events where you can learn off coaches. Have you got quite a defined philosophy now in terms of how you work with players? And we'll often talk to coaches on this podcast where, of course, it's more than just the technical now. So you've got the power aspect, yeah. You've got the physical, you've got the nutritional, you've got the mental, there's certainly the psychological side of things now. Is it something where you put a plan in place for each goalkeeper that you work with?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got, I think the saying is true that you can only make the saves that your body allows you to. So it's a massive part, obviously, your physical development. And the same as what's going on between your ears, because, you know, you can have the best goalkeepers in the world on the training pitch, but unless they can do it on a match day, then they're not going to have the career that maybe some people could have. So, yeah, I don't think there's is a way, and my way is the only way, but I have a way. I have a six-week cycle where I think I cover everything within goalkeeping. And so what I'm saying is that if a goalkeeper drops a load of crosses on a Saturday, I'm not just going to do crossing for the full next week. I've got a plan that every 6 weeks we're checking in and we go as a group away from the training ground every 6 weeks with the goalkeeper, with the conditioner, Dan Hughes, who's designated to the goalkeepers, and with our psychologist, Matt Toms. We go to a Starbucks, a Costa, we thrash it all out, you know, what's going well in training, what's not going so well, what are the scenarios, and we get everything out there. We create all the potential problems, and then we find the solutions, and then we crack on for 6 weeks again. And I think by setting season goals, 6 weeks goals, career goals, that, and keeping in check with your keeper, you can get more gains than just sort of addressing things when they're going wrong.
What are some of the biggest, because you touched on there, some of the difficulties you get, what are some of the biggest challenges you have working with not only the lads, but then working with, say, the manager, working with the different departments within a football club, and ultimately trying to get the best of each department to make sure that your goalkeepers are getting the very best service?
I think the biggest challenge in the first team environment is always that the manager wants three or four that can play, but only one of them can. So you've got the dynamics of that to manage. But also, when you work for the club, you're trying to develop young goalkeepers and bring them through, but you might have the managers who, rightly so, only care about the short term. So you've got to work with the club to try and develop the long-term aims, but keep the manager happy with the short-term aims, because obviously they want to be successful on a Saturday. But as we all know, goalkeepers have got to go through that process of making mistakes and learning and coming through that way. So, yeah, it's definitely tricky at times, but I guess that's the politician in yourself as a goalkeeping coach that you've got to do on a day-to-day basis.
I think part of getting the opportunities that you get as a goalkeeper coach who hasn't played the game, Paul, is just that, right? It's getting the opportunity. And Andrew Sparks spoke about hours. He said hours was actually really important, just to go away and get your coaching hours, regardless of where you went, getting your hours as a goalkeeper coach. Now, David Wagner, who was manager of Huddersfield at the time, fortunately has an open mind, and I suppose that's something that you need from a coach, from someone in charge of the club as well. And he said that everybody needs an opportunity to show what they can do, and this is Paul's. If it's possible and the right thing for the club, we always want to give players and staff from our academy the chance to progress. So I guess in terms of getting your opportunity, it also depends on who that is that's sitting above you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Andrew's right. I've done, holiday courses with 40 goalkeepers and me and another coach and had to work out numbers and think on your feet. And I've coached ladies teams, I've coached disability teams, I've done a wide variety of things, but ultimately I have just got out there and got on the grass and coached and coached and coached. And do you know what? I'm quite proud of the goalkeepers I've worked with and how many league debuts and league games they've had at various levels. And I believe in myself. I believe in my process. Like I say, I don't sit here going, I'm the best goalkeeping coach in the world, because I'm not. I learn every day. But any time I'm given an opportunity, I'll do my best to take it. And I'm still not where I want to be yet. I've still got big aspirations and I know where I want to be. But yeah, David, I was helping support the first team when I came into Huddersfield, because a lot of clubs now are going for two goalkeeping coaches, because it is a big role, because there's a lot of recruitment. And when I was at Huddersfield, we had three seasons really where we didn't know what we were doing. Are we getting promoted or are we staying down? Are we coming down or are we staying up? And there was a lot of things going on behind the scenes. And for whatever reason, David just said, listen, I believe in you. I've seen you enough and I'm going to give you your opportunity. And, I'm forever thankful for that. What I would say is I did have a couple of other opportunities at the same time, but to be given your first role in the Premier League is just dreams come true with a lot of hard work behind it. So, yeah, still speak with David most weeks now. He's obviously doing really well at Schalke, so he's a good guy.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, yeah, and this is where I touch on the fact that we get so many listeners and a lot of our goalkeeper coaches that have dreams of making it into the professional game, let alone the Premier League, which is phenomenal. And some of the experiences that you must have had during your time in the Premier League, I'm sure there's plenty to speak of. So when you're working, I want to drill into the detail a little bit of when you're working with the goalkeepers, because I know goalkeepers have lots of different methods. Some, for instance, will do essentially the same drills week in, week out. So it might be that if you've got the standard kind of Sunday, Wednesday off, then it might be that Monday, Tuesday is a little bit tougher and fitness drills and going through bits and pieces Thursday. And a lot of goalkeeper coaches will go through some crossing and kicking and go through a lot of the techniques. Then Friday might be a short, sharp session in preparation for a game Saturday. Do you have like a basic model that you would follow when it comes to what sort of coaching you would do? Do you try and mix up the drills as best as possible? Are you trying to introduce new drills all the time?
Yeah, I mean, Camille makes me laugh because he says my saying is it's the same but different. So I've got, like I said to you earlier, 6 weeks worth of work that I go through. I have three main themes each week. Then I have an opposition session that's based on who we're playing. I do distribution every single day. I kind of go first, second and third line each sort of different day. So, you're building out and then you're sort of into full backs and eights and then obviously your longer stuff. Like I said, there's no right or wrong way. But for me, if you go out and do a full session on kicking, then you're at risk of, pulling thighs. And ultimately, it's a massive part of the game, massive part of the modern game. So just drip feeding that in every day for a part of the session is something that I definitely stick to. I like to do a technical warm-up related to the theme. So say we're doing 1v1s and blocking, then that'll certainly be in the warm-up. Because obviously, when you are working at this level, you can rely on other people like Dan to do the pre-act. And when they come onto the pitch, they're ready to go. And I appreciate I've been in that situation where I haven't had that luxury and you have to warm them up first. And then I go into what I would call a technical game practice. So just practicing over and over and over that thing, that theme that might happen once every three Saturdays, working it out as a group. What's the best way to deal with it for your style, your profile of the goalkeeper you are? Because obviously my four goalkeepers are all different in their own ways. And then obviously putting that into a game realistic practice. And again, because of where I'm working at the moment, if I want six academy players to make something a bit more realistic, then I can get access to that. And again, I appreciate that you have to be creative when you can't have that. And I've definitely been there as well. So, I think you've just got to utilise what you've got available to you. But like you, the original question, do you have a method of work? Then yeah, I do, and I believe in it, and I'm constantly trying to improve it as well.
Do you film a lot of your sessions, Paul? I've seen on social media that sometimes you get them to set the camera up so your goalkeeper sessions are filmed. Do you think that's an important part of goalkeeper coaching?
Yeah, every single session we film, and that again, that's not a luxury I've always had. It's something I've fought for, because I think the ability to look at the man in the mirror and for the goalkeepers to come in and look back, and I don't think Jonas will mind me saying, for example, I had an issue with him setting really, really low, and he said to me, I'm not setting low. And I was like, well, in my opinion, you are. So we set up a camera where he could see it, and then do his set, and then obviously why, say, Ben Hamer was in goal, he would go to the side and look, and he's like, wow, I am. So sometimes they need to see it for them to even believe you, because they don't feel what you see at times. So I think it is important that if you can do that, then yeah, it's an extra coaching session for sure. It's a massive bonus. And again, I'm respectful of who's listening, that not everybody's got that luxury, but when you do have it, it's definitely something to use.
And that then brings us on to games as well, because, and I know this has become more and more, and certainly when I started playing, it wasn't used at all, video footage. But then the last couple of years, it would always be a standard practice. After training on a Monday, I'd sit down with the goalkeeper coach and we'd go through the clips from the game. Yep. And you go through good, bad, and different. One of the things that I don't know if there is necessarily a way to judge goalkeepers on a factual basis. And I know they're trying to bring certain stats in. So the expected goals saved is one of the stats they use. And I don't know if you buy into them too much, but we're still in a position, I feel, where there isn't necessarily a right or wrong, or there isn't necessarily anything factual out there to say that a goalkeeper is a very effective goalkeeper, for instance. So how, when you're doing the analysis with goalkeepers, do you have anything like that where you're able to give them objective markers on where they can improve their game?
Yeah, I mean, what I do, I get the goalkeeper to clip up his clips and I'll do the same, and we meet and see what we've got. And obviously, a lot of the times we've got the same thing to speak about. And we basically, I just say, look, should you have saved that? So you should have saved it. You shouldn't have saved it. So say if there's a cutback and he's tapped it into an open net or whatever, then... And then maybe then ones in between where on another day you might have got it, or if you'd done something slightly different, and they're the ones we sort of speak about more. But if there's something like say when we signed Jonas, for example, there was a lot of goals going in at Mainz where I felt if he was just 2 or 3 yards deeper, he'd give himself a better chance to save the ball. And I showed him them, we worked on it, and then we looked at comparable shots where he's made the save. So that's like, it's not a factual thing, but it's clear that there's a higher percentage he's saving from the same sort of distance, because as you know, every shot's not the same, and you know there's so many variables going on in front of you. But I think the keepers buy into it more if you can show them and you can back it up. Not just show them when they've done something wrong, show them when something's worked. So if we worked on something on a Wednesday and it comes out on a Saturday, show them the training clips, show them the clips, and then they've got a lot more belief in what you're doing, and they've got a lot more confidence in that they're not just going out to keep fit, they're going out to get better. And you need the keeper to back you up on that, but you know, goalkeepers, they all want to learn, most of them want to learn, and that's why it's such an enjoyable place to be on the training pitch with the goalkeepers.
Yeah, something I want to link to that, and it's something that really keen to ask you given your background, and I'll go on a bit of a tangent, but we often see that ex-players go on to become managers, which when you actually consider it, to go from being a player to a manager, it's two completely different job roles. Yet we see that so often that they'll progress into that. Similarly, goalkeepers go on to become goalkeeper coaches. Now, there's a little bit more similarity there, I would assume, because you're working with a position that you know. But similarly, you might be a fantastic goalkeeper, but that doesn't mean you can then teach the technique that you know into somebody else and ingrain it into them. It's, again, a completely different skill set. However, the one thing that maybe you would have if you were an ex-Premier League goalkeeper and you were then a goalkeeper coach, I guess instantly there'll be a level of respect, I think it's fair to say, because of the career you've had. Have you ever had any difficulties on the back of that? Any goalkeepers that you found hard to bring on board? Even though you might have fantastic knowledge and you've got a real defined philosophy, the fact that you didn't play in the Premier League, has that ever been an issue?
No. I would say that I won't name him, I had a goalkeeper, international goalkeeper, Premier League goalkeeper, coming back from an injury in my younger days. And obviously I was taking him for a few rehab sessions, and he was just going through a bad period in his career, I think, and he definitely had a pop at me in terms of, like, you know, what do you know, etc. But I think that just made me realise, or made me more determined, that to improve my knowledge so that if I ever am put in a difficult situation, I've got something to come back with. And for example, when we signed Rob Green, my first thought was, this guy's played in a World Cup for England and I'm going to coach him. Like, he's like someone who I've got so much respect for. And literally, I just said to Greeny, I said, listen, give me 6 weeks. Let me do my thing. And then we'll sit and chat. Like I said to you earlier, we go away and everything's on the table. And it was a great conversation. And it gave me a lot of confidence going forward. And again, I speak to Greeny every couple of weeks now. And I think you've just got to blend your group. Because like I say, when we had Rob Green in the group, you know, I'm not going to stand there and go, right, if the 70,000 people are on your back at, you know, Tottenham, this is what you should do, because I've never been in there. But I can certainly facilitate them conversations and get everything out of Greeny that I can get that the younger guys will benefit from. And I think a lot of the times you've got to be a good facilitator rather than I did this or you should do this. And the one thing I don't like, you know, I watch a lot of goalkeeping coaches and, you know, I watch to learn myself, and that's why I don't mind a few things going on YouTube so people can pick up on things you do. But I don't like it when people say, well, I would do this and I would be here, because I think, well, unless you've got a goalkeeper that's exactly the same size as you, exactly the same frame as you, then it's going to be slightly different anyway. So it's just improving them. And I think no matter who the goalkeeper is or what level they've played at, if they want to get better and you're their coach, then they should be taking everything they can take out of you to get better. Like I said, I give the goalkeepers every opportunity to say to me, Clem, I don't like this, I don't like that, can we do this instead, can we do that? And we have a conversation about it. I've just been fortunate enough that hasn't happened too many times. But yeah, it's I haven't played in the Premier League, and I'm not gonna say I have. So I've coached in the Premier League now, and I've learned a lot from that, and, you know, watched a lot of top goalkeepers up close in detail. So maybe that puts me in a position to give advice that I do. But
I think it does, mate, without a shadow of a doubt. I think it does. And there's the funny side to it, really. I talked about the managers and the owners being open in order to kind of give you that opportunity. Kind of works for the goalkeepers to be open as well, to accept you into the group.
And from a personal point of view, it's, and I touched on it there in the question, in that it is kind of funny that we see that players will go on to become managers almost instantly. We're doing, you know, a weeks long management course, and all of a sudden they're a manager. You know, they do their level 2, level 3, level 4, whatever it is, and they become managers. Whereas, and it is just such a different skill set. And similarly with goalkeepers, where you look at a goalkeeper to have the ability not only to pick apart their game and understand where they're at, but then to be able to rebuild it is an art. There's such a skill in that. Whereas, and I've, you know, I've worked with loads of goalkeeper coaches, some that are better than others, and some that will put on fantastic sessions, but won't necessarily know how to dig into the technique and find a way to fix something if it's not quite right, and really hone that technique so that it becomes part of your subconscious and it becomes something that you just naturally do the new way, rather than, you know, it's one thing knowing a new technique, but it's another thing being able to implement it. So I think, like, obviously we keep referring back to Andrew Sparks because there's certain similarities, I guess. It'd be interesting to see if in 10, 15 years, whether there are more people like yourself that have been students of the game, that have had to come through every level, had to learn absolutely everything to be the best coach that you can be in order to get to the level, or whether it will still be a lot of ex-goalkeepers maybe that are finding themselves in positions, maybe because they know people, maybe because they know the manager and so on and so forth. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that.
Well, do you know what? I go back to a conversation I had with Simon Smith maybe 15 years ago at Hereworth in Middlesbrough. We sat down and he said, listen, Clem, he said, if you're a goalkeeper that's played at the top level for 10 years, you're going to be a multimillionaire. Now, if you want to get yourself out on the pitch day in, day out after that, having followed a timetable, restrictive timetable for 10, 15, 20 years, however long your career is, then yeah, you're made to be a goalkeeping coach. But what I'm trying to say is, in the past, a goalkeeper would finish his career and would still need a job.
Yeah.
So they would maybe have to go into goalkeeping coaching because it's all they know. I think now, with the money available to them, they don't have to do that. And you see the people who have the real desire to do it. Now, I do. Like, it's something I've wanted and I still want. I still wake up every day. If I don't work as hard as I can, then this is going to go away from me. And I love it. I love it every day. So I've got the hunger. I've got the desire. Why does a manager want to play a goalkeeper who's 30 rather than a goalkeeper who's 18? Because he's got experience and you know, they constantly say, oh, he's experienced, he's going to do this and do that. I've got that behind me now, and I still want to get better. I want to look back, now I'm 35, when I'm 45, I want to look back and think, God, I'm so much better than I was then. Mm-hmm. Like I do when I look at myself 15 years ago now. And I think that creates an opportunity for more people like myself, because the lads who are retiring earlier or the lads who are playing lower, with respect, they ain't going to have the financial package behind them to have that choice. So maybe they're the ones that are really going to come through. And like I say, I still speak to Rob Green week in, week out, and Green is just loving not having to be tied to a timetable like I am. I got back at 1 o'clock in the morning last night, you know, from the Fulham game, and you know, I've got today, and then, you know, you back off, you know, or see my family next week, next Sunday. You know, it isn't just a case of, right, at 10 o'clock you take the keepers in the corner for 45 minutes and that's your job done. It's a 12, 15 hour day every day, and people like myself have got to work even harder than someone like a Shea Given at Derby, who, you know, and I say Shea because I speak to Ben Hamer a lot because we've got him on loan there, that he's obviously had an unbelievable career. And like you rightly say, he has the respect of the lads instantly because of who he has. And he has my respect. And I've listened to him on conferences before, and I'm lucky enough that I can speak to him through Ben. So it's, you know, it's just different for us guys. But I think, in answer to your question, there will be more of us because there's more managers like that now as well. You can't just flick a switch from a player to a manager. It's a completely different career, and it's the same as a goalkeeper to a goalkeeping coach, in my opinion. But having that career behind you definitely gives you an advantage over someone who hasn't.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are more managers, of course. Your very own Danny Cowley at Huddersfield at the moment. Quite an interesting situation that you've got the pair of you who didn't actually play pro football. So that will be an ever-increasing trend, I'd imagine, as well. I'm going to get on to Huddersfield very shortly, but I just want to quickly hark back to something you mentioned just a while ago, Paul. You said that you get goalkeepers to clip up their own clip. So is that you giving goalkeepers the footage? They go home and they go on iMovie or Premiere, whatever package it is, and actually edit their clips together themselves?
Yeah, because I think if I just go, right, I think this, I think that, what about this, what about that? They're not actually learning. If they haven't come to me, say, I don't know, let's take a cross comes in and they go for it. I could say, well, you shouldn't have gone for that. But I actually want to know why they went for it. You know, what made you think? I don't know if you've seen the one that Camille made against Stoke where he punched it on about 17 yards, and my instant thought was, Camille, let the defenders defend. And like, but that's his strength coming to things. Now, we had a long conversation about that, and he explained why he came for it. Then he explained the mistake he actually made, and he changed his technique of his punch at the last minute because he realised how far out he was. But we had a real good conversation about that because he'd watched it over and over again, and then he came to me and said, right, so if I'd have just gone, there's the clip, this is what I think, I don't think he really gets the learning that if we do it the other way around. And I think as well, as a coach, can you imagine the amount of times a goalie said to me, well, this is what I was thinking, and I was like, wow, I didn't think of that. So it's a two-way thing. And listen, I'm not going to spend hours and hours at home watching footage of them if they're not going to put in the effort as well, because it's their career and they've got a, you know, they're the ones who've got to improve and they're the ones who are going to benefit. So it's a two-way thing. And I just personally find, especially with the younger ones in the academies, for example, that they get so much more learning from thinking about what they've done.
So on Huddersfield this season then, Paul, I noticed quite a decent quote from Danny Cowley. Difficult start to the season. The Cowleys came in. There was that 7-game unbeaten run. Smack bang in the middle of that, there was a draw with Blackburn. And Danny Cowley, after the game, actually credited you for one of the goals that Huddersfield scored. Now, this is another area that we can sort of delve into where it's not actually just goalkeeping that you can contribute to. And he said that, you know, you suggested leaving one up from corners, which they haven't always done, and that resulted, I think, in them managing to get a penalty and then scoring from.
Yeah, so when my role is to do the defensive set plays as well. Listen, it's been different under different managers. David gave me sole control. He trusted me. It was my setup, my thinking, my change, my responsibility. When Jan came in, it was still under me, but I had to do it his way. And it was difficult because you're responsible for it, but it's not necessarily what you think. But like I say, it's a good opportunity to learn a different way and see how things are done. When Danny came in, and Nicky, they had their own way as well. And because of the experience I'd had with Jan, I sort of said, Danny, listen, with the profile of players we've got on the pitch, this player, he can't edit, so he can't go in his zone. He's not a very good man marker. He's not good at 1v1 defending when he's short, but he's fast as lightning. And I know Cam will catch one of these. And if he catches it and he runs there and Cam knows the plan and kicks it there, we'll cause problems. And Danny found it hard to say yes to me, but ultimately Danny gave me that trust. And like a good manager that he is, he gave me the praise and didn't take it himself, which gave me confidence as well, because there's been other managers who would take that credit, and that's a sign of a good manager, that he recognised what happened and he wasn't afraid to say it. So yeah, you've got to earn the trust of your manager, you've got to earn the trust of your goalkeepers, you've got to earn the trust of the players. You know, when I'm presenting set play meetings to the players, again, a lot of players in there played a lot more games than I have, and yeah, it's just about earning trust, believing in what you believe in, because you've been through different experiences. And like I say, I'm 15 years down the line now, and I'm hoping that, you know, I've got at least another 15 to go and beyond. So I'm sure I'll get better. And Danny and Nicky have got the same desire.
I want to ask you about your current crop of goalkeepers as well. I know you've worked with, obviously, many goalkeepers over the last 15 years, but you've got an interesting situation now where you've got, as of recording, Joel Coleman played in the game yesterday. You've got Kamil Grabara, who's got a short-term injury, and you've brought back Jonas Lerzl, of course, who is a big fan's favourite as well. So you've got three very strong goalkeepers at the club at the moment.
We started the season with Ben Hamer, who is going to be the number one, with Joel Coleman. Jonas had obviously moved on to Everton, and young Ryan Schofield, who we had a season-long loan lined up for. And again, you're working with managers and the dynamics of your group is important, but when your manager maybe has a different opinion or can fall out with one of your goalkeepers and disregard them, there comes a point where you've got to change what you're doing and come up with plan B. And when Danny came in, I just felt it was really important that Ryan went out on loan, because he's a young goalkeeper. It was great that he'd been put as the number two and he got a game in the Championship and he played a game in the Cup, but ultimately he played two games in 6 months where he should have played 25-30. So yeah, Danny gave me the green light to get Ryan out on loan, which obviously left us short with only two senior goalkeepers. We knew the risk and we spoke about the risk. And then unfortunately, Camille got a head injury on Tuesday night, which left us going into this weekend's game with only Joel as a senior goalkeeper. So we needed to be creative. And, you know, I'm not at a club where we can go and just spend 70 million, 5 million, 10 million on a goalkeeper. We haven't spent any money on a goalkeeper other than Joel Coleman for 70,000 or whatever it was 5 years ago. So we have to be creative. And a lot of clubs don't want to let their number two and three goalkeepers out willy-nilly. So it's, yeah, you have to be creative. And obviously Jonas coming back helps us. And when Camille's back fit, which I'm hoping is really soon, it'll be a really good challenge between the three of them.
And you had a quite extraordinary situation on Boxing Day, Paul. You definitely know what's coming here. Of course, Huddersfield playing Middlesbrough. You're in the dugout. You look across to your left or your right, whichever way the opposition dugout is, and your son's sitting on the bench too.
Yeah, obviously my stepson, Nath, plays for Borough. Bizarre. We've spoken about it so many times, about the conundrums and what ifs. And It was bizarre. I can't describe it. I mean, even he said he looked over a few times, and I was up in the technical area, like giving instructions for a set play or whatever, and he's just like laughing. So you know, we've been to a Borough Boxing Day game. Nottingham Forest played Borough on a Boxing Day. I don't know how many years ago. We're sat in the stands. There's two Borough fans. You know, we didn't have games on that day ourselves, and then 4 or 5 years later, we're in the dugouts. It was unbelievable. And then he came back to my house after the game. He gave me a lift home. Most of the family are Borough fans, so I got a lot of stick walking in through the door. Pig bag was on Alexa. Yeah, it was a bizarre day that I was not happy at. Yeah, but delighted he made his debut the other night as well against Birmingham. Absolutely proud as punch of him. So.
Not a goalkeeper though, mate?
No, centre half. He's not that daft.
Yeah. I also very quickly want to touch on a moment from back in the day as well at Middlesbrough. This also has something to do with a little lad. You essentially saved his life. Is that right?
Yeah, a bizarre situation. I went out to a school to do a coaching session. In my early days at Middlesbrough, I was sort of like, I was like on a 20-hour contract with the community and a 20-hour contract with the academy. So I was sort of between the two, like I say, before the ECCC sort of brought in the full-time goalkeeping coach role. And yeah, I was just doing this session and asked the kids to sit down while I explained the next thing. And this kid who was a bit lively, Lewis, sort of up dancing about. And I actually said to him, sit down, you clown, what are you doing? And then I was like, Lewis, you're scaring me, your son. And yeah, he had a problem, and he went still, and obviously I had to perform CPR, and yeah, it was it's a day I'll never ever forget.
Incredible. I mean, his parents, I should say, must have been, they probably are forever indebted to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them where, obviously, we're lucky in this country that the Football Association, the Premier League, the EFL, that they all ensure that to be a coach, you have to go on the various first aid courses and emergency first aid. And, you know, you'll have been on them, everyone's been on them, and sometimes it's a bit of, oh, my God, I've got to sit through this 3 hours. But whatever it was kicked in, I knew what to do. I didn't panic when I look back. And you just think, fair play to the FA and everybody else who's involved in that, because they do give you the training for that reason. Hopefully it never happens to anyone listening and they don't have to go through that. And, you know, it might not happen to you on a football pitch. It could be in the street. It could be one of your God forbid, your parents or family members or anything. But ultimately, I knew what to do, and I knew what to do because of the training from the courses. And I've done quite a few talks on it, and you know, people saying you're a hero and you did this and you did that, but ultimately it's the training that the FA put in place, and I can't describe it. You just know what to do. I just knew what to do. If it happened again, I hope I would know what to do again. And just luckily enough that Lewis got through that, and you know, Middlesbrough were very supportive with me, offered me counselling, time off, anything I needed. But ultimately it happened on the Friday night. I missed my academy session on the Friday night, but I was coaching on Saturday morning because I thought I just got to get on with it, because, you know, if you don't, it might linger. And yeah, it was a day I'll never forget.
Yeah, well, I suppose in quite a positive way to close the podcast, I guess. Obviously, we always ask a final question, and I will ask the same question for you, but I guess the fact that you are still very much, you mentioned you're 15 years in, and all been well, you'll have 15, 20 years more, so it might be a little bit of an addition to this question, and we do get a variety of answers when we ask this question. But Paul, what has goalkeeping given you? And I will add to that, what do you hope it will give you in the next 15, 20 years?
Well, first and foremost, it's given me an opportunity to provide for my family, doing something I absolutely love. I've travelled the world with it. I've met some amazing people with it. It gives me an absolute buzz to get out of bed on a morning every day. I love talking about it, watching it, doing it, everything involved with it. I just love it. And I think there's a lot of people in this world dread going to work on a Monday morning, and I don't. And that is, you know, we all spend probably more time at work than we do at home. And to have the passion I do for it, to call it a job's just like, it's just laughable. It's just something I love doing. So, yeah, it's given me everything, really. And my other son that we haven't mentioned, Theo, he's 14, he's autistic, and to come on with a with a shirt, you know, signed by Jordan Pickford or something like that. I've done in the past to see his face and everything else. It just gives me a great life that I love living at the minute. So, yeah, it's given me everything.
Paul Clements, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem.
Another goalkeeper coach who wasn't a pro goalkeeper working with a manager who wasn't a pro footballer.
Well, there you go. It's really inspirational. We touched on it there in the pod, of course. But I just think for a lot of goalkeeper coaches coming through, just the realisation that there are goalkeeper coaches out there doing it at the very, very top level. And similarly, we spoke to Andrew Sparks, of course, as well. And there were similar things in both stories in that ultimately it comes back to that. And there's no simple way of doing it. It is ultimately the more education you have, the more experiences you have, the more hours that you can get coaching, the more chance you give yourself of getting to where you want to be. Now, there's no guarantees with any of this, but the point is that he spoke of all the different things he'd done, the people he trained, whether it was women's teams, disabled teams, coaching 40 kids at a time sometime. You know, so he's been through absolutely everything, and which no doubt makes him appreciate where he is right now. And you can tell talking to him that he's still very much a student of the game. He wants to know how he can best serve those he works with. I'm not meaning servers in serving footballs. Look, how can he serve them from a tactical, nutritional, psychological, physical, etc., etc.? There's so many different aspects to a goalkeeper's game, and he's committed to be the best at his craft.
And I think also, and I'm not saying, by the way, that Paul Clements is arrogant. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. But you definitely have to be quite strong-minded, don't you, to deal with the fact that he spoke of that example of a goalkeeper who was a pro goalkeeper that eventually said to him, well, what do you know? You never played. He's now saying, you know, I've worked in the Premier League. I'm earning my crust.
Do you know what? In the world of football, you're dealing with a lot of egos, it's fair to say. Because, of course, to get to the top of your game in the world of football, you can't be a shrinking violet. So if you're a goalkeeper coach, you're going to be dealing with potentially guys that are on 100 grand a week at times. Now, with that kind of finance comes a certain belief in themselves, or more often than not, and obviously a certain ego. And a lot of the top goalkeepers, you're playing in front of 70,000 people each week, again, there'll be a certain ego. So as a goalkeeper coach coming into that environment, and you haven't necessarily played at the top level, you have to have such belief in what it is that you offer. What is it that you can do that can make a £100,000 a week goalkeeper, a Premier League goalkeeper who might have played 500 games, how can you make them better? And you need to believe that you can make them better, because if you don't, you will get found out. And trust me, those top goalkeepers, they'll start to lose trust in you, lose faith in what it is that you offer. And if that happens, the relationship's broken.
Yeah, certainly an inspiration. I think we'll start to see many more of these. He's really good on Twitter as well, so make sure you check him out on that, at Paul Clements GK. Okay, Richard, that's it for another week.
Fantastic.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with Goalkeepers 365, GK Icon Academies and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.